What I wish to do is allow Jeff Tom to give his governmental affairs report. I'm going to go ahead and give you my microphone, and or does Ed? Oh, Ed has it. Okay. So that Jeff could give his reports, please, everyone, join me in welcoming Jeff Tom.
Okay, thank you. So I want to start by, I'm going to abbreviate this report. We have business to do today, but I do want to go over some things. But I really want to start by talking about Capitol Day. And Donna gave the folks who participated kudos the other night, but I want to re-echo it. And I'm going to try, if I miss anybody, please out there, those of you who were there, remind me and make me include you. But as she said, as Donna said, these folks covered about 90 legislators out of the 120. And our numbers were way down for Capitol Day. But these intrepid souls did all of us proud. So I'm going to list, well, let's clap at the end. But let me list them all off here, or try to. From Southern California, we had Charles Navarrete, artists Bazin and Pampology. We had from the Bay Area, we had Frank Welty and Christina Wood. We had Diane Deutsch, who worked in the Bakersfield area, and other legislators. We from Sacramento, we had Deborah Thompson, and from the Redwood from Eureka, we had Eric Smiley, and from the Redwood Empire chapter, we had whole group, Laureen Cheveny, Gigi DeMarie, Bill Gillespie, and who am I missing? Did I miss one person? I think. I guess that's it. Yeah, no, I know you are, but I gave you Eureka credit. I'm not giving you two credits, Eric. Or did I forget you? Okay. I think that's it. I think I got them all. So now let's hear it for all these folks because they really worked hard. So I want to. Yes, that's right. Table two. Exactly. The Capitol Day table over there. And I want to talk first about the three legislative imperatives that we did cover. The first one is AB 455, a bill we are supporting by Mr. Medina. This bill would require that certain Braille and certain reading and math task force for readers of Braille that were adopted back in the earlier years of this century, 6 or 7 years ago, that these standards be modified and changed to align with more current standards that have been adopted statewide for all students. And of course, we want our students to, you know, be expected to achieve the same standards that all sighted students are. So, and if this bill passes, there'll be a group of experts that I am confident we will be part of. Again, like we were back in the days when the task forces met to develop the original standards, and so that we will be able to work on making sure our standards are equal with those for other students. AB 459 is a bill we are opposing. Many of you remember AB 727, a bill that we, along with others, successfully opposed 2 years ago. AB 459 is almost a duplicate. It basically would increase from 35% in a phased-in approach the percentages of food, and also apply to beverages in state-building vending machines, all the way up to 100% that must be healthy, in accordance with nutritional guidelines. And since virtually every vending machine in state buildings is operated by a blind vendor under the Business Enterprise Program, this is going to result in loss of income for our vendors and for nobody else. And so we're opposing that bill, and we will hopefully maybe there'll be some dialogue this time with the folks who are supporting the bill. We'll see. Roy Harmon of our group is involved with it, and we'll work from there. Our third legislative imperative was to support additional money for disabled student services programs in community colleges. About 5 years ago, the colleges took, I've heard two figures, either a 12 to 16% hit, but for their general funds. But disabled student services took a 40% hit. And many legislators weren't even aware that they did it when it happened. So the goal now is to try and get, now that the governor has proposed a lot of new money for community colleges in his budget, but none of it would specifically expressly go to disabled student services. So the proposal, and we were working with other allies in the field, the proposal would be to give what amounts to half of the cut back and to restore the funding levels up to a level that was half of what it had been. Those are our three. I actually, and Donna doesn't even know this, but I was actually asked on behalf of our organization, and we'll have to decide whether I'm going to do it, but we were actually asked to meet with the governor on this issue with community colleges. I seldom surprise Donna, but this is one she didn't know. I hadn't had time, just happened up a day or two ago. So, and it's good that it's because of you that we are getting that kind of recognition. We really are starting to become known in the state capitol. Okay, I'm just going to go through a few more bills that we are going to be supporting and a few more items. AB 5 is a bill, and I don't happen to have the author. I was going to try and use the internet this weekend, but I didn't get to. And so, but I will get the author and put it on the, I want to do a governmental affairs report and get it out very quickly after I get back. And so I will provide the author, but it's a bill we've voted to support, on prohibiting discrimination on the basis of homelessness. And I guess it's almost prophetic or ironic or whatever you might say, but I'm sitting over there sort of coordinating the whole Capitol day on Thursday in the Capitol, and I get a call from someone who was turned away by the major women's shelter in Sacramento because of her blindness. And, of course, I referred her to Kathy as well for, assistance from Ellen Murphy, but we're also going to be working with it with we're going to be, I've been trying to contact them and have not yet gotten through to them, but we're going to be working on that because this is not the first instance, as Kathy can tell you and as Donna can tell you, all three of us know very well that we have these instances where blind people are turned away because of rules and whatever they have from homeless shelters and women's shelters, and this is a really sad instance where you're dealing with abused women who are turned away when they need help. And then they refer them to organizations like the Society for the Blind, there's nothing they can do. It's not that they don't want to do something, but what they don't have the resources. And so this is an issue that I think we really need to focus on, not only in Sacramento, where I obviously will focus, but all over. So hopefully this bill, and I think we probably should talk to the author to make sure that something is in the intent is stated or something like that. But this is a bill that could go a long way toward helping in that area, among many others. AB 133 is an interesting bill, and it's a little hard to explain, but I'm going to do my best. It is a bill that says when a publisher or the like submits a book or other type of document, principally books, to the State Board of Education or a local board of education to try and get the book accepted by the state or by a school district for use, that they would have to provide that book also in a digital format. That's what the bill does. That's what the bill does. What our governmental affairs committee has asked me to do, and what I have done, is offer amendments to the bill that says when you provide that digital format, it's got to have a digital format that's accessible to screen reading software. The committee has instructed the president and I that if we can't get these amendments accepted, we will oppose the bill. It may be a good bill, but still we have to stand on principle. If the author was, I've met with the author himself is willing to accept the amendments, but the author, of course, has sponsors, which I assume are publishers, and we don't yet know. I'm still waiting to get an answer back. You know, you can only make so many calls, which I have done, and I'm still waiting to answer back. Eventually, if we do not get these amendments accepted, we will have to oppose the bill, and we will do so strenuously because it shows, in my opinion, some bad faith on the part of the sponsor. Even if the author, you know, is feels our cause is just, it doesn't do any good when the rubber meets the road if they won't, if they won't accept our amendments. There's other bills. One interesting bill, which I will mention, which this committee has decided we are not going to take a specific position on because it is so complex, but which I think is important that you know about, is Senate Bill 492 by Ed Hernandez. This bill would seek to expand the scope of practice for optometrists in certain ways to do certain other things. It is very difficult to assess. You know, on the one side, you've got the arguments that optometrists are getting more and more well-trained all the time. They're doing a lot more than they ever did before. There's not as much care around because of the shortage of primary care docs and ophthalmologists. On the other side, you have the view, well, they just don't have what it takes to do the jobs that we ophthalmologists do. I don't know I can't give you, and I think it was the view of most of our committee members, that we don't really know enough to say which of those particular tracks of thought is right. And so I encourage you, if you have an individual view on it one way or another, to certainly become involved with it. We will certainly track the bill for your own edification because it's an important issue to us. But sometimes there are issues that we can be educated enough to take a position. So it's an ongoing issue. It might not be decided this year. If it's not, and it goes on next year, someone may decide to write a resolution on it. And in fact, that was done 15 years ago or so in a similar bill, which we opposed. But those are interesting issues. We continue to be very much involved in a long-term care services and support coalition. There are a lot of things happening in terms of expansion of Medi-Cal managed care. I'm not going to go into too much detail, just take maybe 2 minutes on it. In June, Medi-Cal managed care is going to expand into rural counties, and then starting later this year, Medi-Cal managed care is going to be expanding for persons that are dually eligible for Medicare as well as Medi-Cal in certain pilot counties. One of the many things, and not the only thing, that we are doing is, because it was not done when managed care began for many Medi-Cal recipients, one of the things we're working on, and we have folks such as Bernice Kandarian working in this area, is we are working with the state to make sure that both current managed care recipients under Medi-Cal and future enrollees get information in accessible formats so that they can make choices, so that they can try to get their physicians into the plans if they decide to go for a plan, so that they have the same ability to make the choices that sighted Medi-Cal beneficiaries do. And, you know, want to thank Donna for all her encouragement on this. I want to thank Bernice for her participation on the task force. Sheila Gunn Cushman is also on the task force. So we're well represented on that as well. We're also working in a number of other issues, a couple of which you'll hear today. Continue to work in areas from everywhere, from pedestrian safety to in-home supportive services to you name it. And, of course, we will work in other areas that you tell us about. You know, we look to you for guidance as to what you want to see us cover. There are other bills that I could cover today, but because we do have other things that I know we want to do, what I'd rather do, if it's okay with Donna, is open it up for a couple questions if there are specific things that you want me to address.
Do we have any questions? And I heard Bernice first.
Thank you. Jeff, the California Council of Citizens with Low Vision strongly objects to optometrists doing things like prescribing medication, doing injections, so on and so forth. And I just want to encourage you to support our view on that.
Okay.
We've had members in the organization who have lost vision because they are not trained to administer medications appropriately.
I sent out a couple weeks ago to three lists.
Yes, you did.
Information on this bill, and I encourage people on either side of it to write resolutions, to do what they wanted, so that this organization would have a position if it chose to do so, and nobody did that. So, you know, and we had a full discussion yesterday also in governmental affairs, so I think that for now we've done as much as we can do. If the issue has not been decided by, you know, the first year of the session, and it may not be, this is certainly an issue that is going to have a good deal of controversy, I would assume. For one thing, it's a turf war. And I'm not saying who's right or who's wrong. I'm just saying it is a turf war. So if it isn't decided and the bill is still floating around, then, you know, you're certainly encouraged, as are people on any side, to write a resolution for the fall convention and bring it up.
Yes. Okay, we have Kathy, we have Keith, and then there are two more, correct? Kathy?
Pretty much.
15 years ago, we did oppose this bill, and that wasn't the first time. We always have. And I would like to ask that the, I don't know how it works here, that the legislative chairman and the resolutions people get together and try to find the resolution we had, because it did outline our thinking in the way of this situation for many years. It's always been a turf war. The optometrists have always wanted to do more, but I want to say one more thing. I'm glad you're going to update the legislative thing, because you said you're going to do it after this. And I wish when you put things out on the list, you remember that a lot of us don't have the list. Put it on the connection, please, and put it in the legislative report. Put it somewhere, but don't put it on something that some of us don't read.
And what I would say is I would definitely encourage everybody, I've been saying it over and over all weekend, to read the connection, call the connection, subscribe to the connection list, go to the website, and I'm sorry?
The last legislative report I looked at was 2 years ago was an old one.
Correct, it is. It is. And what we need to remember as well is that we have Jeff, who's our governmental affairs chair, who's volunteering his time. We definitely need folks to assist in advocating with legislators. And as Jeff said, he will be putting out a new report soon after he returns. But I've heard a lot of people say, I don't go onto the computer, et cetera, et cetera. but they also don't telephone and read the connection. Okay, so I need folks to use those tools that we have out there, because we do try to put everything on the connection. Our business comes first. Anything CCB related directly from CCB gets first priority. What one of the things that we do and will continue to do even better is when there is a legislative report or governmental affairs report put out on the lists and on the telephone as well, because again, there is a box for that. Jeff puts a message in the connection. Here it is, in the connection. If you don't leave with anything today, remember the connection. Thank you. Option 5, Pam says. And you will be able to get Jeff's reports on option 5. Use the connection. It's there for you. Phone, web, email lists, but it's there for you. Thank you.
Yeah, just to respond to Kathy, not only did I expect your criticism, but I agree with it. That's one of the things. There's just some things I haven't done well enough. And Kathy, I totally agree with you. I need to have more of those reports, but there's just so many hours in the day, and some things just sort of get through the cracks. So I keep on me about it, Kathy, because I know you're right in this particular regard. Yeah, no, well, it's right.
Well, go ahead, Keith.
Okay, the question I have that pertained to the first bill you talked about, the upgrade of standards for math and literary braille. The problem is that there's a lack of qualified VI teachers at this point to be able to do that. Is there going to be a kind of a solution for that down the road?
Solutions for VI teachers?
Yeah.
That's really a bigger problem than we can handle at the state level, I think. I've been in many, many national resolutions meeting with the new current chair of the ACB Resolutions Committee, Mark Reichert, who was a very important factor in the drafting of the Ann Sullivan Macy Act, which Mitch talked about Friday night. And this is an issue which we have talked about many, many times, and it's only getting worse. Well, it's a problem for all teachers, but it's definitely getting worse for VI teachers and for teachers in the special education field, no question about it. We need more schools, we need more programs, we need more money.
And in fact, it's interesting, the agency I used to work for, LA Unified, is actually closing Francis Blaine School at the end of the school year. So there won't be any VI school in Los Angeles. And they're going to just ship all the kids off to wherever.
I actually have a quick question. Is there a second volunteer that's here that can provide you with assistance, Ed, because you're getting us water and you're running the mic? So.
Yeah, I have two.
Okay.
Mary Lou and
another. Great. Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah.
Okay. Who is our next question? Because we had two more after Keith.
Say something, Roger. She can't see your hand.
Jeff, this is Roger. I wanted to just mention something that troubles me, and I don't exactly know how to deal with it. First, let me just say, in the matter of not enough VI teachers, one thing that I think ACB and CCB should do is make sure that the programs for VI teachers are welcoming blind people as students. I think there have been times when that hasn't been the case. And, of course, school districts need to hire them, too. But I wanted to say, in regard with was it 133? No, I'm not sure about the... The one about...
133, yeah.
The one about...
The digital format.
Digital format.
Yes.
I felt, I feel uncomfortable about that in the same way that I felt uncomfortable about our bill to make them put things in regulations and formats that we can read. It seems to me, to some degree, that's the fault of the people who make the computer access programs. We're kind of caving into their limitations, and I know that in order to have full accessibility, basically we need a lot of ramps, and we also need wheelchairs that can climb stairs, if you understand what I mean. We have to do some of it, and they have to do some of it. And I know we have to push them. But I sometimes feel as though the access folks are not doing all they could to make the formats that are out there accessible.
Roger, I guess I would say that, all you need for accessibility is an accessible PDF file. And nowadays, most things can be, and most things are, unless they have, graphic documents as part of them, most things are put in PDF, and then descriptions used for them if need be. So, and that's all you need. You don't need to put them in a Word file to meet accessibility requirements. It may not be readable by every screen reader, but that's not what they need to do. They just need to make one that is, that meets accessibility requirements, and that's all they need.
Pampology?
Oh, I'm sorry. They were just telling me you saw that you recognized me. I didn't hear you. first of all, I wanted to thank Kathy because she stole part of my thunder about the connection. And I just want to encourage people, to call. Ed's a really good reader too, you guys. I had two things. First of all, when Artis and I visited Senator, I believe it was Mitchell's office, and I think that was one of the founders of the 459 regarding the vending machines, and we got into a really heated debate with I think his name was Jay, the assistant that we spoke with, and he was asking, he essentially said he didn't believe that people would go elsewhere if they wanted junk food. And so he said that they had done studies, whoever they are, had done studies saying that maybe the first day they would be upset, but after that they would resign to the fact that they're only getting health food. Well, so he asked us for a study, if we could send him a study that we've done showing, the results of the blind vendors taking a hit when they don't have the food that people want. So I just wanted to know if that was possible. And my other comment is when I went to see Senator Ed Hernandez, on the resource that we had, the room number was not correct. So that was his old room number. So I think that the new one is 6011. I'm not sure if that number, but you might want to look into that. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. It could have been a transposition error that I made because those. Well, we got the most current office list that Ed could procure a few days ahead of time. So I don't know. I figure the error was probably mine, but, let me go back to Pam's question.
Okay.
Because it's a very pertinent issue. And I've heard the same thing from the advocates on that side of things. And in fact, when I at the vendors' luncheon yesterday, I said, look, you folks need to do a much better job of producing data on this issue if you're going to continue to advocate for your point of view. And really, it is on them. We can do it. They're the ones that are on the front lines, and they have to ultimately provide the data. They did indicate there was someone down in L.A. County which has this requirement already who does have such data that will show a drop in income. And they are obviously going to need, to do more of that in order to keep convincing, legislators and public officials that, this type of healthy food legislation is really going to be detrimental to their livelihood.
Thank you. I'd also like to share with you related to governmental affairs. We've been advocating for years in relation to vehicle donations and the dealing with the legislative changes that occurred several years ago that have caused us to drop the amount of cash that we receive per donation, and people aren't giving as much donations because of that as well. We, through Jeff, have been providing assistance to the person who is working on that in D.C. What I want to say is that just recently we've been asked to give information with our statistics, some before the bill was passed, some the year, and our current as far as how much we receive and numbers of vehicles donated, because the Washington Council of the Blind was going to have opportunity to meet directly with a key person related to that bill. So they called me, and I touched base with Ed, and we were able to get our statistics. And they wanted to thank us because they said the information we gave them with hard and fast numbers really helped things. And you know, so we're working on that front still as well, related to vehicle donations. And I want to also thank Jeff for being available to Mr. Schwadron, who is you know, in D.C., kind of advocating that position. It's affecting a lot of charities, ourselves included, and hopefully changes will happen. I also want to make a statement related to what Jeff was sharing about being known in the Capitol. I have no problem saying this, and I'm definitely going to say it here in front of all of you right now. I think that folks listen to the California Council of the Blind because as things get tougher out there, CCB remains balanced and reasonable. And I think our legislators hear that. Now, I'm not saying we're not tough when we need to be tough, because we are. We work with the system. We're honest. We have integrity. We don't play games. We just tell it like it is as our membership sees it. And I think that is very well respected in the Capitol, and I want all of you to know that as well. We continue to advocate, regardless of our resources. We need more and more of you to assist Jeff. And when you say you're going to provide assistance, we need you to help out. Because, as I said previously, CCB is each and every one of us. So, Jeff, I want to thank you for your report. And okay. Second? Okay. And I understand we have some discussion. Point of inquiry, Frank Welty.
Hold on. Get you on the recording. Jeff and Donna, is there a bill number yet for a vehicle donation bill in this Congress?
As I recall, the status was, the last I remembered, and Mitch can correct me if there's more information, or maybe Don even, that this year they were following a different strategy. The strategy was basically to work behind the scenes to see if they could incorporate essentially what was done, what would have been done in the past couple bills, into comprehensive tax legislation, if such legislation ever gets off the ground. They therefore decided not to introduce a bill, which I think was a really smart idea, because, you know, we in California, we got an awful lot of co-sponsors, as did many other states, but we really led the nation, as we should. But you almost have the idea going in that it was all going to be, to some degree, for naught, because you knew it wasn't going to get off the ground and past the point of essentially the point of introduction and on through the committee structure where it needs to go. So I think they're using a much smarter approach this year, having established that so many members are on board with the general idea of enabling you know, more attractive vehicle donation provision. So hopefully they will you know, be able to integrate this into tax legislation if the leadership ever allows it to to be developed.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Unfortunately, the chair of the, I think it's House Ways and Means Committee, is a Republican congressman from Oklahoma who basically told Eric Bridges that unless there is some offset, meaning more revenue to offset the loss that he expects from this proposed legislation, he has no intention of letting the bill go even to his committee. So clearly the approach that the vehicle donation folks followed the last 3 or 4 years, it ran into a stone wall because one member of Congress doesn't like the bill, or doesn't like the bill as drafted.
And I truly believe that that's why the change in strategy. So, okay. Any more discussion? And if folks could stand so that Ed could.
Hi, good morning. This is Andrea Pitzenbarger from Orange County.
Yes.
Just a quick comment. My husband and I donated a vehicle to CCB in 2005. And we donated a vehicle that had actually been in an accident. But it was a very easy process. It's not a big deal. They were very generous with the tax credit. And I want to encourage you guys, if you have relatives or anybody that you think could benefit from this, they came and picked it up. We didn't have to do anything. They did all the paperwork. It was very simple and they made it very painless. And I really appreciate that we were able to do that. And I just encourage you to really encourage people to, because it's, you'll get more donating it than you would selling it.
Thank you. Okay, we have more discussion specific to the acceptance of the governmental affairs report, because there is a motion on the floor.
I just wanted to to comment on Andrea's thing that we. People that we have relationships are good, too, for donating vehicles. We just, you know, I get the plaques printed for the awards, engraved for the awards, and the people who engrave our plaques gave a van to us. So, you know,
yes.
Plus they give us a discount. They're very nice folks.
And we so also...
Relationships,
yeah, absolutely, Roger. It's key. Some of our chapter members have also informed me that they've told their families and they've donated as well. So I want to thank everybody that's contributed to that. Any more discussion related to the governmental affairs report? All those in favor of accepting the report, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Before I go to the treasurer's report, because someone's going to ask... I am not having a Constitution and Bylaws report given today because we spent so much time on it yesterday, and everybody probably still has that very well in their memory. So Gabe is, as they say, off the hook for this time, because business will be reflected in the minutes next time on that.